Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. If I would have known I was going to have to speak after Matt, I wouldn't have came. I can't tell you how much Matt means to me. We met a year and a half ago when we were just getting started on our journey with the Art Inc. And Matt so graciously accepted my ask of him helping us and steering us in the right direction. And, you know, we meet regularly for lunch, and he helps on a regular basis to give me guidance and direction. And whenever there's a challenging question that we have, Matt is one of our go-to people that we call right away, and he has never, ever let us down. So, you know, to really be able to speak after him, it means a lot to me. My wife was supposed to be here, but we had a little problem with the babysitter, my wife's mom. She was at the grocery store, so she didn't get the memo. So I had to come, and I wish she was here because she truly is my better half, and I'm so thankful to have her. What I want to talk about, you know, the theme is starting from scratch, and what I'll talk about first is the what. And then I'll talk about the how. So what we have done, Kim and Matt have touched on it briefly, is we bought the old Greeley School. It's a 50,000 square foot school building. When we first told people that we were going to do it, a lot of people looked at us like we were crazy. And if I were them, I would have done the same thing, because if you can imagine two people, a couple, buying a 50,000 square foot school building that's over 100 years old seems a little ridiculous. But we did. And we've been in the building since last summer. We had our ribbon cutting. But in the course of a little over a year, we have taken that old building and turned it into a piece of art. And if none of you have never been there, you owe it to yourself to come and see what we've done, because it's almost magical. And one of the things that we did that was like brilliant, and I pat myself on the back, is that we started planning for every contingency in that building from the very beginning, starting with the furniture. If you can imagine taking over a building that's 50,000 square feet empty, just furnishing that joker is a task. So we had the wherewithal to anticipate that. And I don't want to say thanks to, because it's really a sad situation, but because of the closing of, the department store, Bergner's. We were able to go in with about $10,000 and buy enough furniture to completely furnish that building. When you walk into the grand hallway, that in my art really makes it look like a gallery. But what you will see is the shoe department of Bergner's. But I tell you, Bergner's has some nice furniture. we have over 200 chairs, 100 tables. We have desks. We have computers. Everything you can imagine being in a facility of that size. And we did it for about 10 grand. It's amazing. Now, one of the things that we stumbled on inadvertently in just trying to be good business people, out of necessity, because of the size of that building, and the reason these buildings are so unapproachable to the average person is because of the utilities. They operate off of these old archaic boilers. They're probably 30% efficient, wrapped in asbestos. We called a couple of companies out to assess them. They wanted to charge us 10 grand just to cut them on. So I thought about it, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to turn these boilers on. I started putting furnaces throughout the building. They're 95.5% efficient furnaces. And then my mind started to click. And the next logical thing that we could have done immediately, I thought about, was the lights. This building had all fluorescent lights. We literally went in and rewired over 500 light fixtures, snatched the ballast out, rewired them, and put LED lights in. The month before we did that, our utility bill was $2,000. The month after, it was $1,000. Now, the third thing, you know, Edwards, the company, they just had a lawsuit, and they have to disperse a certain number of dollars towards the community for some of their environmental infractions. So we found out about that, and thanks to my son, I have a great team, but my son came and said, Dad, we need to go after this. And I was like, go after it. I didn't even look at it because I was so boggled down in so many other things. But he picked that ball up and ran with it and found us a solar company, put together a proposal, and the next thing you know, they were asking us to give an oral presentation. So we just gave that oral presentation this week. If we get that money, they're actually going to pay for us to have solar panels on the roof. Now this inadvertently is a game changer, and I'm going to tell you guys why. There are old buildings like Greeley all over the country. And the biggest prohibition to those buildings is the overhead and the utilities. When Peoria Public School ran that building, and I looked at their back utility bills, in the worst months, they were paying $8,000 to $10,000 a month. No small organization can handle that. And consequently, what happens is when they leave these old schools, they're too expensive to tear down, and they're too expensive to run. They stay barren for years, and they just become an eyesore. When we get these solar panels, our utility bill will be less than $500 a month on a 50,000 square foot building. That's a game changer. I guarantee you, when municipalities find out about that, it would be in the city's interest to pay for that and then to find smaller organizations like arts organizations to occupy those spaces and turn those spaces into valuable pieces of the community. So we just stumbled on that inadvertently, and that's probably one of the most exciting things that we have done with that building. So now, when you think about a nonprofit or any business, you think about sustainability. Most people, when they think about sustainability, they think about finding enough money to make sure this organization runs. What we did was the exact opposite. We wanted to eliminate as much debt in the very beginning so that we wouldn't have to be worried about finding so much more debt at the end. We bought the building cash. I was in a negotiation with the Peoria Public School District for 4 years to get them to come down to the price that I could pay cash money. So we do not have a loan attached to this project at all. Once we turn this facility into a green space, 80 to 90% of all of the funding that's coming into us will be going towards programming. And that's what people want to hear when they give you money. They don't want to think that all of the money that they give you is going into some big old decrepit building. And the thing about these buildings is this, right? If you go into Greeley or any of these old schools, the walls are 24 inches thick. They did not build these buildings to tear them down. They built these buildings to last forever. If there's a tornado, if there's an earthquake, you want to be in Greeley. That's how they built these things. And if you think about it, right, turning his space into a green facility was not as challenging as one would think. You have to think, when they built these, there was no such thing as central air. So they had to build these things with that in mind. So actually heating and cooling this building, once you get it up to the level where it's comfortable, it doesn't take a lot to keep it there. So that's probably one of the most incredible elements of what we've done. Now, what we're trying to do with Greeley, we're turning it into a community arts center. We have, in our first summer program, we offered filmmaking, coding, dance, theater, and drawing. We had about 50 students in our first program. It was incredible. We also send about 25 to 30 artists into the Peoria Public Schools in their 21st Century program, their after-school program. And what our vision was, it was to create a place where kids can come and get off the street in some of those most crucial hours of the day. When kids leave the school, and by the time their parents get them, that slice of time is perhaps the most deleterious time of the day for our young people. That's what we've done. Now let me tell you how we've done it and why we've done it. I see a lot of familiar faces in the audience, so many of you have already heard a little bit about my story and my journey. I grew up on the west side of Chicago, and if you can imagine, when I say the west side of Chicago, I say that for a reason, because it's the worst side of Chicago. It's the poorest side of Chicago. It's the most violent side of Chicago. And all of the things that were taking place on the west side of Chicago, I was a part of. I started literally going to jail by the age of 12. I went in front of a judge 3 times as a teenager, the same judge, and he told me if he saw me again, he was going to throw the book at me. I turned 18, and consequently, I didn't see him again. Right before I was getting ready to barely graduate from high school, I graduated at the bottom 10% of my high school class. I never took an ACT or an SAT, but in the back of my mind, I felt like I needed to go to college. Talked to my guidance counselor, and she kind of discouraged me. So I went and took the test for the Marine Corps. All I knew was that I wanted to escape the madness that was around me every day. 2 weeks before I was supposed to enlist in the Marines, a friend of mine told me in an inadvertent conversation that if I went to a junior college and did well, I could get accepted to a university. And I immediately ran to Triton, which is a school in the suburb of Chicago, and enrolled in school, did well enough that first year, to where Bradley University accepted me the following year. I came down to Peoria, and what I had done was I successfully removed myself from the ghetto. But I didn't remove the ghetto from me. And so consequently, I was at Bradley doing the same things that I was doing on the west side of Chicago, and at the end of my junior year, I got caught up selling drugs. Bonded out, fought the case my entire senior year, and 2 weeks before I was supposed to graduate, I was convicted. The judge allowed me to bond out to graduate. I participated in my exercise commencement, and 2 weeks later, I was given 15 years in prison. It's okay. It's okay. Let me tell you the irony, okay? State Farm has a grant. It's called the Neighborhood Assist Grant. My wife and I went after this grant last year. Well, not 2019, but 2018 with this venture with Greeley School. It's open to 2,000 nonprofit organizations from across the country. We were one of those 2,000. We made the cutoff. And then State Farm internally selects the top 200 organizations that they like the best, and we were one of those. Those 200 organizations had to go out into the community and get as many votes as they could in order to win. 5.5 million votes were cast. We were one of the winners. Now, my wife went to a luncheon last year, and on the panel was an executive from State Farm. The question was posed to her, what could you do to be a more effective leader? And so she shared with the audience that there was a couple and the other half just walked in. Say, hey, baby. So the question was posed to her, what could you do to be a more effective leader? And she said, well, you know, you guys have a couple in Peoria that just won the Neighborhood Assist Grant. She had no idea my wife was in the audience. And I asked my team to support them. And one of her team members wrote back and said, I didn't think you would be interested in anything like that. So her point was that she needed to be more in touch with her team members. After the luncheon was over, my wife went to introduce herself and to thank her for her support. The lady said, oh my God, you won't believe this, but I was on a jury that convicted your husband. Complete circle. And she told my wife that over the years, it's haunted her, her choice, because all of these weird occurrences, including the State Farm grant, but I used to have a panel truck with my art wrapped around it. She saw that riding down the highway one day, saw my name on it. She was at a friend's house in Chicago, saw some art commenting on it. Her friend told her that, oh, this is an up-and-coming artist. He just got out of prison. It happened to be my work. So she told my wife, she said, that decision of hers haunted her all of these years. So when I finally met the lady, I assured her that her decision was the right decision because I was guilty of sin. So I don't tell that story as a way of garnering sympathy. I was a bad kid. I grew up in a bad environment. But that's a part of my story to you today. How do you start from scratch? And when you think about a kid doing 7.5 of a 15-year prison sentence, having the audacity to decide to be an artist and come out of prison and follow that dream all the way until one day he and his wife purchase a 50,000 square foot school building is the message that I think anybody who wants to start something needs to hear. Because what I've learned over these last 25 years is that there is a process to everything. And once you learn the process, it is transferable. If you learn how to start and see something all the way through to its fruition, you can apply those skills, not the thing that you're doing, but the thing that it takes to see something through to the end, you apply that to anything and you'll be successful at it. For those of you who have been to college, you understand that. I tell people all the time, college was not difficult. It was a process. And if you stuck with the process, you could achieve whatever you set your mind to. The determining factor for me to decide to be a full-time artist while I was in prison was I put some art in a visiting room that I didn't want to sell. I liked it so much that I didn't really want to sell it, but I wanted to show it. And I put a price on it that I thought was like just crazy. Now, keep in mind, I was selling paintings for cartons of cigarettes. So that price wasn't as crazy as you would think. But it was $500, and somebody bought it. Out of the visiting room in prison. And that was my aha moment. I said, if I could sell one painting in prison for $500, I could sell one every week when I went home. And $500 25 years ago to me was enough for me to get started. It was enough. That's all I needed. I needed something tangible to hold on to. and to see it through. And so now, if I had to tell you how to start from scratch on anything, I would say this. First, you have to evaluate your circumstances. Know what you have at your possession, in your possession, your abilities, your resources. And to illustrate this, let me say this, right? If, how many of you all watched Good Times growing up? Yeah. All right. If you were JJ and you ask your dad to do an art show for you, and he brought all his buddies from the projects into the house to do this art show, what do you think realistically you could charge for your art? Not much. You could charge something, maybe 10, 15, 20 bucks a piece. But if you were the son of Bill and Melinda Gates, and you said, Dad, throw me an art show, and he threw you an art show, what do you think you could start your price points at? Whatever you wanted, right? So that's a quick illustration of how you have to assess who you are and where you are, because that is a part of the process. So many people, they inaccurately assess who they are. And they ask of themselves things that are impossible. That's like JJ putting $10,000 and $15,000 on his prices, on his paintings, in the projects. It's not that JJ had a bad idea, but his calculation was skewed. You have to start with where you are. I tell people all the time, if you're in a situation and you have nothing, you don't even have a place to live. A part of your processing is that, okay, I know I have to stay in a shelter. But the shelter is only a stepping stone. And you have to start from that very basic level. Really, where am I and what do I have? And that was my motivation coming out of prison. I actually opened an art gallery while I was in the work release center coming out of prison. And the way that happened was I talked to John Battles, who was the superintendent of the work release center, and I said, I'm an artist and I want to do this for the rest of my life. I don't want to go work at McDonald's. Let me go find a gallery. I can paint in the gallery. And if they sell my work, I get paid. And if they don't, I don't. And that's all I need to do. So he told me, okay, go for it. So I found a gallery here in Peoria that let me work there under those circumstances. The owner of the gallery, bless his heart, was the most incompetent fella I ever met in my life. And I, at that moment, realized that if competency was not a factor, if that wasn't a factor, I was already light years ahead of him. So the next thing was I just had to find a place that I could afford realistically. And I found a storefront, and it was right next to a beautiful lady, Janet Davis, Just For You Clothing on Sheridan. And she took a chance on this little knucklehead boy coming out of prison. She rented me that space, $250 a month. And now what I realized was when you open the doors of a business, you don't have a business. Because unlike what I thought, nobody was kicking the doors down buying my art. I thought when I pulled that curtain open and said open, oh, people were going to be bum rushing in there buying my art. And I'm talking in 3, 4, 5 weeks, nobody came. And I was in a work release center. So I had to figure out what could I do. The good thing was that the rent was so cheap that it didn't require a lot. And back then, And some of you people might be too young to know what this thing is, but we had what was called a telephone book. And I started flipping through this telephone book and calling organizations and galleries and asking them if they were interested in looking at some art. And, like, I just stumbled onto something that they call cold calling. I didn't even know that existed. I just knew desperation led me to do this. And I started getting a few interests. And the next big thing that I did, because I was in a work release center and I didn't really have much movement, but I worked my way up to 24-hour passes, and I snuck up to Chicago. I wasn't supposed to go to Chicago, but on the weekend I snuck up to Chicago and went to one of the galleries that I had stumbled on, and I went into this gallery, looked around, and went up to the owner and told him I was an artist and I would love to show him some of my work. And this guy just flat out told me, I only look at art on Tuesdays. And I'm like, you know, I just felt like sitting down on the floor. But I said, okay, do you mind if I look around? And so I looked around his gallery. I was in there for about 3 hours, I swear I was, until everybody left. And then I went back up to him. I said, look, I'm going to have to be perfectly honest with you. I'm in a work release center in Peoria, Illinois. I snuck up here to show you some of my art. I can't come back on Tuesday. And he said, oh, man, let me see it. I went out to my car, came back in, and he fell in love with the art. He actually, from that day forward, over the next 10 odd years, would buy anywhere from $500 to $2,000 worth of art from me. He paid for my first gallery. Now, people would say you got lucky in meeting him. And they would ignore the yellow book that I had in the beginning. That's a part of the process, being very diligent about what you have to do and educating yourself and finding the resources to make it happen and starting from where you are. You have to make sure you assess your situation accurately. You have to assess the goal that you're trying to attain accurately. And if those two things don't line up, it's not going to succeed, and it's not going to fail because you had a bad idea. It's going to fail because you did not understand the process and you didn't evaluate the circumstances accurately. You have to evaluate them. And to tie it in with Greeley, you know, I've always spoke since I come out of prison at prisons and high schools and colleges, and I would always meet these young people. And after hearing me speak, I could see that they wanted more, and I wanted to give them more. But it's only so much you can give them in 30 or 40 minutes. I remember speaking at a school, at a graduating class, a GED class, in the juvenile prison in Chicago. When I first walked in, it was a little guy that stood out among everybody else because he looked like a bag of nails. I just knew this guy was the worst kid in this whole prison. And after I gave my presentation, a man walked up to me and said, my son would like to speak to you. I went over to the table, and lo and behold, it was the same kid that I looked at when I first walked into this prison. And the little kid sat at the table with tears rolling down his eyes and said, I want to change my life. I don't know how. What do you do with that? Where do you put that? That is the impetus for the day I drove by Greeley and saw this for sale sign on it and started to wonder. I wonder. I called the realtor, still just wondering if he would let me see it. Started looking in the building. And now, I don't want to miss this part. Over 20 years, I've had galleries. Every gallery has gotten a little bigger and a little better. But every one of these spaces, I had to come in and gut them out and build them back up. So over the years, I've become a handyman on steroids. So that's a part of evaluating what you have to offer. So when I walked into Greeley, it was three things that I wanted to evaluate right away. One is the roof, the foundation, and the plumbing. Well, scratch the plumbing. The plumbing wasn't that important to me. Electrical was, though. I wanted to look at those three things because either one of those things could have been a deal breaker for me. But all three of those things were structurally sound. The school district did an incredible job of preserving the building. They weatherized it when they closed it up. So the only thing this building really needed was superficial changes. And so now I'm getting a little more curious. And I asked the realtor if he thought that they would be willing to negotiate on a price, and the realtor said, no, I don't think so. Then, I thought about it. That was the realtor, right? That's what he's supposed to say. So I came home and told my wife, I said, I just saw this school building, and I think it would be an awesome opportunity for us to buy it. And that moment is when I realized my wife was as crazy as me. Because she said, okay, let's do it. And, my wife, she's a performing artist. She studied theater and music at Columbia College. She toured Northern Italy as a young lady. She lived in L.A. for 18 years and was in all kind of plays and commercials. And so, she's got art to and through her as well. But also, art saved her life. When she was in high school, she was, one of her family members, someone close to her family, tried to sexually assault my wife. And it led her down a spiraling road of depression to one day she wanted to end her life. And it wasn't until she met a high school drama teacher that steered her into the theater that she finally found something that she could stick her claws into to pull her out of that darkness. So her passion for not only the arts, but reaching back and trying to help others to get through their darkness like she got through hers was on the same level as my passion. We both understand that there's too much darkness in these inner cities. And all we want to do is shine some light into those dark places with what we do normally. We're not trying to step too far outside of our comfort zone. We're trying to use our strength to save these kids. So she was on board 100%. And then, we had to then start to figure out how can we get this building? How can we sustain this building? What are the obstacles that's going to come along the way? And no matter how hard you think and try to identify those things, you're never going to be able to identify everything, but it is your responsibility to sit down and try. You got to play devil's advocate. You got to think of every potential danger that can come along and stop this project from going all the way. And that's what we did. Literally over the next 4 years after me announcing that tour, we literally brainstormed what we would have to do to see this thing through from a financial perspective, from a mental perspective, from a social perspective, everything we could imagine. And we also elicited the help of our friends, who many are much smarter than us, and we brainstormed with them. We ran into a snag right away with the zoning. You know, because across the street from the school is a halfway house, and they actually have sex offenders. And so when we went to get our special use zoning, you know, they came in as they did with every other organization that tried to buy Greeley before us and opposed it. And that was a huge challenge, but we didn't go in there armed only with our intellect. We elicited the thoughts of 50 people. What do you think? How do we approach this? And so when I had to stand in front of the zoning commission and in front of city council, we knocked it out the park. Because we didn't go in there shooting from the hip. We studied. We evaluated it. We looked at case law. We looked at precedents. We looked at everything possible. I mean, if you want to know something about zoning, call me. I'll tell you. You know what I'm saying? That's a part of the process. You have to do your homework. And a lot of people, what people become really good at is starting a project. Things don't go well. They give it up. And then they start another project. Things don't go well. They give it up. And over the course of 20 years, what they become experts at is quitting. That's what they become experts at. I remember in prison, I used to play chess. And if my opponent, how many play chess? Okay, so not everybody. Let me tell you what chess is. Chess is this very strategic game, and every piece on the board has a hierarchy in terms of its power. So a pawn is a pawn. You throw a pawn out there, you know, you give that up to get something bigger. Your king and queen, knights and rooks and all of those, they have a hierarchy. And all of them have a certain level of significance and power. And so if someone would take a powerful piece of mine early in the game, I had a tendency to concede and knock the board over, let's start again. An old guy told me, he said, don't do that. He said, if somebody takes a superior piece on the board of yours, don't quit. Dig in, because that's where your lessons are. You don't learn when you quit. You learn when you dig in and you fight even harder. And so when we were presented with that challenge with the zoning commission, we could have bailed out, because let me tell you, a lot of organizations heftier than ours did just that. They packed up and left. But I remember thinking, they just took my queen, but I'm not going to quit. And I remember when I was at that first gallery in Peoria that I told you that guy wasn't too bright. It was a TV repair store, VCR repair store right next to it. And this guy, he had a little chessboard in the window. And so I was walking to work one day, and I just moseyed in. I said, you play chess? And I'm fresh out of the joint. So chess was important to me then. So he said, yeah, let's play. So we sat down and we played. And the first game, I beat him rather handedly. And then he was like, let's play for some money. And his game, in my mind, was so weak that I was like, okay, even though I didn't have any money in my pocket. I said, let's play. And he took my queen within the first 4 or 5 moves. And boy, was I ready to run up out of there, because I didn't even have any money. But I just dug in. And I eventually beat him. And if that old man hadn't have told me what he told me in prison that day, I don't know, I might have been back in prison as a result of that. But if that old man hadn't have told me what he told me back in that day when this zoning issue came up, I would have folded up. But I would have folded up 1,000 times before that on so many other situations, because I wouldn't have thought that if I just stuck with it, things would work out all right. And I'll tell you one other story, and then I'll open it up for questions. But I remember I moved to Chicago and opened my gallery in Oak Park. And, you know, I went from, you know, the first gallery I had in Peoria was $300, $250 a month. The second gallery was about $400. The third gallery that I was in Peoria was $700 a month. And then I jumped to Chicago and I went from $700 a month to $2,000 a month rent. I lived in the gallery. I built out a space for me to live in the exact same size as the prison cell that I slept in. I didn't put a bed in there. I slept on a wooden platform with blankets just so I would have a constant reminder of where I came from and what I was struggling for. And I had leveraged myself to the hill. And I had a show that I was doing in New York City. It was a major show. And I tucked every penny I had in it, but that's okay because I had just finished a commission piece for a doctor in Chicago. And I took the piece to him, and we actually played a game of chess. That's funny, we did. And when I was getting ready to leave, and I think he owed me like $5,000, and that was going to get me through this show. And he looked at the pieces, he said, "Jonathan, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I'm spending a lot of money on this, and I'm not crazy about the piece." My heart dropped. I'm like, "Oh, my God." And I knew that I couldn't tell him, "Well, it's a commission piece. You got to pay me anyway," even though that was within my rights. But I couldn't tell him that because I would have won that battle, but I would have lost the war because I would have lost a good client. So I told him, "Don't worry, I'll do it over." And so he could see that he had just sucked the life out of me. And he said, "Well, when you come back from New York, I'll give you half down on it." I said, "Okay, no problem." And at the time, I had a little caravan, a van, and it was so raggedy. Oh, it didn't make any sense. I hopped in this van, and he lived on the south side of Chicago, and I was in Oak Park. And have any of you ever driven on the Outer Drive, Lakeshore Drive in Chicago? Man, I got in that car. Driving down Lakeshore Drive and the transmission went out. Boy, I sat there asking God, what was he doing? The good thing, the tow truck come and snatch you off, but they just pull you to the side, get you off the highway. And I end up catching a cab. This was a Saturday night and I'm broke, don't have any money. Sunday, I got on the phone calling anybody that I could call that may have owed me some money or that would, you know, loan me some money. I was on the phone all day. And one of my clients I called, he said, "It's ironic, I just put a check in the mail for you." I got that check. It was just enough money for me to get to New York and back. And I went to New York. This is the first time I showed in New York. And I did $30,000 in 2 days. So sometimes when you're at your wit's end, boy, if you can just make it a little bit further, that's when your victory comes in. Don't think it's over. It's just a challenge. And all you have to do is persevere. But do your homework. Make sure that all your pieces are in a row so you're not miscalculating anywhere. But you got to hang in there. And if you do, victory is literally on the other side of pain. And I can't tell you how many times that has happened in my life. If you guys have any questions, I would, you know, be happy to answer. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, no, you know, I'm going to tell you, it had to be God, and I'm going to tell you why I say that. I was at an art show, and she came in my booth looking at my art, and she was asking me a million questions. And then 20 minutes later, this guy comes in the booth, and it happens to be her boyfriend. And so, you know, my thought was, like, I don't think this guy can handle her. And the next thing you know, we were married with a baby. Come on up here, man. Yeah.
Sorry. That's Nikki. Yes. Thank you, guys. Any other questions? I know. I think we're just all in, like, awe. Wait, Jackie's got a question. Okay. Jackie, don't need the mic.
Oh, absolutely. Nikki, you want to?
Yes. So one of the initiatives that we have is called the Founding 100, and it's the Founding 100 Donor Wall. Basically, anyone that donates $2,500 or more will be known as the Founding 100, and you will live on our wall in the Romaine Arts and Culture Center, and we are halfway there. So we just need 50 more people to be part of the Founding 100.
And then in addition to that, what we also offer is all of the rooms in the building, in addition to our programming rooms, we offer them for rent to people in the community. So if you want to have any kind of a meeting in a room, it's only $15 an hour. We're not trying to rob anybody. But if we can get enough rentals in the community for $15 an hour, it's a minimum of 2 hours, so that's $30. That will actually give us enough money to really make things happen. Because if you think 10 rentals a day, and it could be under anything, right? But 10 rentals a day is $300 a day. And over the course of a month, that's like $8,000 a month.
And that's from, you know, having a meeting. We have a small conference room to our theater, which, you know, can hold about 200. So if you have a board meeting or...
The theater is more than $15.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This is true.
Oh, yeah.
This is true. So for the $15 an hour, we have the conference room, which, again, can hold a board meeting, a small meeting, a neighborhood meeting. And then onto the classrooms, we fed up to about 30 people. I know Matt George has had his executive board meeting there. We've had the Peoria Public Schools had a board meeting. Methodist College just did a teacher training in one of the classrooms. So it's so many things that you can do inside of the spaces. So come and support us. $15 an hour, yes.
No, no basketball. We got rid of sports. No sports.
So
we are art. We are Little Miss Athletic One.
Arlene. Hello. So our lane is strictly arts education. So the multi-purpose room doesn't have hoops in there. It's strictly a theater and event space.
And another thing, we have we do event. Hold on, baby, extend it. We do events like on the Valentine's Day this year. We're doing a paint party.
It's a couple's
paint
Valentine's
party.
And it's on Valentine's
actually,
Day.
And I'll actually be instructing the class. Normally I don't do it, but for this event I'll be doing it. And then on the 29th of February, we have a musical tribute to Black History Month with a soul food dinner.
Ooh.
And it's a dress-up event where you come dressed up like your favorite heroine throughout African American history and people that have supported African American history. So when you come and you support those things, that too inadvertently supports our mission. So everything that we do is with a purpose. It's a way that we can raise and garner revenue without taxing too many people, you know, because one thing Peoria is a very giving community, but I'm sure the people who give get tired. And so we're trying to be as, you know, as imaginative as we can to help raise money and to not burden those who are already overburdened.
In the back. So our organization's website is Art Inc. Peoria, so that's ArtIncPeoria.org, and that's a great way to get a hold of us. We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Art Inc. Peoria.
And I have some cards for the event with it, some information on it that I'll pass out. Well, we don't have the kitchen up yet, but we will be putting in a commercial kitchen and we will be renting it out.
Mm-hmm. We'll let you know when it's ready.
Mm-hmm. Do you do like other communities, like if they want to come, like with kids?
Yep.
Yeah.
When you say other communities.
Like homeschool.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we just were contacted by a co-op, a homeschool co-op that wants to rent our space. Quest rented our space, Quest School.
Peoria Public School.
Peoria Public School.
And then another thing that's really exciting, we are forming a partnership with Junior Achievement. It's a financial literacy-based organization. And we're putting what's called BizTown in our school. And BizTown is just a bunch of small stores where the kids will come in as part of a curriculum-based activity. They'll come in and actually act out a town.
Right, so Junior Achievement provides the educational component where the kids go in and learn how to run a town. They have a mayor, they have a banker. And so it'll be like a little, you know, a little bank, a little Lowe's, a little Home Depot, a little grocery store, things like that. And the kids actually learn how to run their town. And so the partnership is we do the build out and provide the space, and then they provide the educational component that goes through the schools.
So we'll have like literally several thousand kids coming through the building every week. Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Make me cry.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I ever have time. We want to do a choir.
I just wrote a grant about for music, so please, we'll talk.
Okay. Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's my sister. I know. I agree. You won't get an argument out of me. Won't get an argument out of me. And so, you know, and also if you have anything that you think you might want to do in the school building, just run across us. We're looking for partnerships. We're looking for people to help us because this is truly a community space. We have to have the community involved or else, you know, I mean, we don't need to be in a school building. You know what I'm saying? It's for the community. It's going to better the community. And, you know, we plan on doing things that's going to be bringing people from all over central Illinois to Peoria. And we just want to put a different light, particularly on African-American and Hispanic community, that people see when they hear or talk about this community. We want to be a beacon of light for so many people.